Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio, for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, Russ, K5TUX, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 555 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. And tonight we are doing a deep dive episode, so we're glad you're here with us for that. And it's kind of an interesting topic, and we want to get into it because we want to call attention to it and tell you what's going on in the world of what it is we're about to talk about. But before we do that, I'm going to start the introductions with the On Assignment Cheryl, W5MOO. But I'm Russ, K5TUX.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right, so a little while back, and Bill can do the thing where he looks up the number, we did a deep dive on CloudLog, and we did that because that's the logger that I use. It's an online logger. It uses a LAMP stack, and I enjoy it very, very much. But recently, there have been developments, quite literally developments, in the world of CloudLog. It's been forked. And the fork has been titled WaveLog. It has a lot of the same features that CloudLog had, but it's also done a lot of new things. And we're going to go through like what's the same, what's different, and why you might want to try out WaveLog. And Bill has actually tried it out too, so he's going to tell us what he thinks of it. And with that, I guess he can go and introduce it first, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. We did talk about CloudLog in a deep dive. Man, it's been a while. Episode 304, back in September. Hey, that's like an anniversary. September of 2019. So just a mere 5 years ago. So we haven't talked about it in a while. But I would say most of the things we spoke about are still true, except for possibly newer versions of PHP and everything else. But anyway, yeah, we're here to talk a little bit about WaveLog tonight. WaveLog, for those of you that don't know what it is it's a self-hosted PHP application that allows you to log your amateur radio contacts anywhere. All you need is a web browser and an active internet connection. WaveLog itself is an enhanced fork of CloudLog by 2M0SQL. That's Pete. If you would like to contribute to WaveLog, please see the contributing section below, which is not below for you because you'd probably be looking in your lap or something like that. A little note on the project. The work on this project started at the end of 2023 as a spinoff of the well-known amateur radio software CloudLog. The four core developers, Delta Fox 2, Echo Tango, Delta Juliet 7, November Tango, Hotel Bravo 9, Hotel India Lima, and Lima Alpha 8, Alpha Juliet Alpha, who have pushed CloudLog forward for months and years, decided to continue their work in a fork that led to WaveLog. Since its initial release on February 1st, 2024, WaveLog has made tremendous progress in terms of stability and functionality. We are, that's the developers, are proud that WaveLog is developed by radio amateurs for radio amateurs, without commercial motives, but out of pure passion for the hobby. Every line of code is a result of hard work to continuously improve this piece of great code. WaveLog stands for its simplicity, powerful tools, and open source code. As a web application, WaveLog offers a great advantage of being accessible from anywhere in the world, whether on a professional server, rented web space, or a Raspberry Pi at home. Would not recommend a Raspberry Pi. WaveLog makes it possible to manage your logbook anytime, anywhere. Try it yourself and experience an improved web-based logging on your server. So that's right. Yes, I did finally take the plunge in this. I know Russ has been talking about CloudLog for ages now and has got that into his workflow there in his ham shack. And yeah, since this sort of popped my interest over the past few weeks and episodes, I think we kind of mentioned it here and there. I was like, I'm looking for a topic for the deep dive, and I want to kind of see how hard it is to get this thing set up. So I went on over to the Wavelog homepage and followed the download link. And then over there, they have an entire wiki on how to get things installed. So I went to the wiki and I decided I'm putting this on my shared server. I have a shared hosting server up on DreamHost. That's where I host all my random stuff because I have a very, very, very old account there that gives me unlimited everything. So I created a nice little subdomain on my ne4rd.live domain and proceeded to install Wavelog based upon the installation on a Linux server. Since the LAMP stack is already there on DreamHost, I don't have to really worry about any of the plugins and everything else like that. I have the latest, greatest PHP installed and everything else. I know that their minimum version requirements for Wavelog is PHP 7.4, but you should be running minimally the LTS, whatever that is at the time that you actually listen to this podcast. So I installed via Git, just like they instruct. I used the htaccess file to remove the index.php, just because it's just ugly. I hate to have an index.php on my site. And Russ helped me with the actually reading the full instructions for that. I had the htaccess file done, but I did not actually change the config. So it every once in a while, you'd see the index.php pop up. So in the show notes, you'll actually see a link to, I believe, both mine and Russ's Wavelog instances. So I was able to get it up. I added a database over on my database server, which is also provided by DreamHost. And this is not an advertisement for DreamHost, sorry. I just just like to let you know I didn't actually put this at home. It is not running at home at all. And no problems at all running through the installer. The installer was web-based. Went through, created the tables. I didn't read many instruction manuals after that point. So after that point, everything was sort of up and running. I could I created my user, I logged in, and now I started the process of actually configuring everything.
Let me stop you there for a second.
Yeah.
I do want to call attention to one thing that's different about considerably different about Wavelog than CloudLog, and that is that the installation procedure, as far as the initial installation, once you have the database created, has a really nice wizard that goes through the installation process, and it like walks you through tuning your PHP and make sure that your directories have the proper file permissions and stuff like that. You basically, in the wiki, you just go to your instance/install, and it walks you through most of the setup and anything that, you know, comes afterwards, like setting up your stations and your actual logbook instances and stuff like that comes afterwards. But as far as like from bare metal with your LAMP stack to getting to a published Wavelog instance, the wizard walks you through all of that, and it's really intuitive, and it's a lot nicer than CloudLog was.
Yeah, I vaguely remember installing CloudLog at one point, and I mean, I didn't find it too hard, but it was a lot of manual steps, if I remember correctly, when I did it.
Yeah, there are still some manual steps, like you have to have the proper permissions on a few directories inside your hosting environment, and PHP may or may not require some tuning, like max execution time, max file size, and some other things. It basically just tells you what the parameters are and what it wants. And once you set those, you're pretty much good to go. And as long as you have access to a database server, then it's pretty straightforward. And because it is a LAMP stack, as we all know, M stands for either MySQL or MariaDB. So you will have to have that piece of it. But I don't remember if the wiki actually went into the database setup procedure. I think there was some reference to it. So I think they have that covered as well. But yeah, the initial installation, pretty straightforward, and the wiki is quite good.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is quite quite simple to follow the directions. Do they have the database? It talks about creating the database user and stuff like that, but it points you to the Maria or MySQL database documentation if you actually have to set up, you know, MySQL or MariaDB. There's a level of expectation. They do also have this in a Docker file, so should you want to just deploy it via Docker, that's an option as well for those of you that are running, you know, Kubernetes or something like that, or want to launch a Docker file.
And I assume that your SQL instance is running in the same box as your web instance. Oh, it's not. Okay. Well, that's good, because mine isn't either. So that's one of the nice things about it. I have two database servers, actually, for handling the back end of all of my things that require a database. And so being able to put the Wavelog instance on a server that is not the database instance is quite nice. But of course, you can if you wish.
Yeah, yeah, you can point it to localhost if you want, but it's not a requirement. And, you know, as long as your networking is set up as such that you've you protected the route to your database server, you know, that's the most important part. So, yeah, if you are exposing this out on the interwebs, you definitely want to take a lot of security precautions in mind. Since mine's already in a hosted environment to lock down to a single user, it already has a lot of that stuff in place. Nice part about this too, being open source, all the code is there. You can review every last line of code and whatnot to ensure that it's doing exactly what you're expecting it to do, and it's not doing anything that you're not expecting it to do. I think the only thing I would say, technology wise, they do mention that they are running the CodeIgniter 3 stack for the PHP service, and I believe CodeIgniter is up to version 4 now, so a pretty major revision. But probably a lot of breaking code along in there for upgrading the framework itself. So I don't know if that introduces any security things. I didn't take time to research that. I mean, it's only my amateur radio log. I don't really care, right?
So yeah, it's not secure data as far as I'm concerned. So I'm sure they're going to work on getting everything up to the latest versions of the, you know, the build framework and all that. But, it works the way it is, and hopefully you're doing proper things like securing your database so it's not like wide open access, and you're only limiting it from whatever host you're coming from and that sort of thing. So due diligence, that's all.
Yeah, you definitely have to set up some security stuff on your own if you don't have it already done. But once you get in and you're presented with the interface, I do like the fact that it starts out in a dark mode. I think that's the default setup. I didn't have to flick that, or it's not detecting it from my setup. It's actually within the context of the account setup and preferences. So speaking of account setup and preferences, that's sort of where you're going to go next, because you'll want to have all your information fully filled out. So if you go into your account, so you'd find your little call sign, which is the user you created, and you go up to your account, you would have a few tabs here, or little collapsed sections. And one is the general information. That's going to be where your account information is, and your call sign grid square that you've already set up. The next section would be the Wavelog preferences. This is where you can change the theme. So if you don't like the dark theme, or the one that they present to you, they have several themes that are available, including Cosmo, Cosmo Wide, Cyborg, Cyborg Wide. Those are dark themes, Darkly, Darkly Wide, Default Wide, Superhero, and Superhero Wide. So lots of options there. They do have some default language, so there is some internationalization going on in the application. You can set up your time zone. That's pretty important. Should you want everything to work right. And I haven't checked to see if it knows the difference between my time zone and the server's time zone and everything else. I'm assuming it does, because it should be using Zulu time anyway from the server, and it should know what its time zone is. So I haven't even checked that, but I'm assuming that's fine. The date format is something I changed right away, just because I don't like the date format in a European format, which that's the way it is by default on your logs. You wouldn't know this because you didn't load any logs wet yet, but the date format is a pretty important thing for the US side, to have something that you can read that makes sense. Measurement preference, they have miles there, and then you have some other options here along with the QSO stuff. I didn't touch any of this because I'm still just learning the application, so I left all of this in default here, the logbook fields and the logbook options. There's all kinds of stuff that you can have, you know, showing up in your main display of the logbook, you know, including things like your POTA and stuff like that right away if you want that in your main display. They even have, speaking of POTA, they even have a POTA auto lookup grid square and name for a park. Interesting. So they also have some menu options you can change here. Map settings, whether your station is displayed, how it's displayed by icon, what have you. And then any show reference fields on the QSO tab. So if you wanted specific references to pop forward on your main QSO tab, so that's where you're actually live logging QSOs in the web app, you can actually have those surface instead of having to go into one of the additional tabs to add that information. So I know Russ was just talking before we started recording about the POTA being already in there. So you can even make it easier, Russ. You can flick the POTA reference to the main tab so you can plug it in while you're live QSOing. Let's see what else here. Default values, whether you need them, default QSL methods, you know, whether you want QSL, Logbook of the World, EQSL, QRZ, Club Log, third-party services tab, or collapse section, or accordion, I guess. These are accordions. The third-party services where you put in your password and username for Logbook of the World, EQSL, Club Log. And then down in the miscellaneous is where you can put if you're you need your AMSAT status upload. So if you need to upload your status of I don't even know what that is. What is that? Upload status of SAT QSOs to. Oh, so if you did a QSO on a satellite and if you want to notify the AMSAT status page that you had a QSO at a certain mode and that mode was active on a certain satellite, you can have that work up. So like this is completely capable to do satellite logging without any extra stuff. If you're on a Mastodon server, it asks you for the URL of your Mastodon server. And there's a WinKeyer feature that's experimental. I didn't get a chance to play with that. I do have a WinKeyer, but I'm just kind of moving stuff around here in the shack. So I didn't get a chance to set that up or show that. And then the last thing they have in here for your account setup is the hams at thing, which I believe is a satellite and user kind of social media site or something like that. Russ, do you know anything about that? The hams at thingy?
I can't say that I do. So okay. That's
most likely satellite. Most likely satellite. So other than that, you also have the station setup, which will be in the next section here. So as you drop down, you'll have a station setup. And that's how your logbook is set up. So if you had additional logbooks that you wanted to do, like if you have different locations in which you log contacts, so this would be important to linking your Logbook of the World certificate and everything else. If you happen to operate from a different grid square or a park or something like that, you can actually keep a separate logbook for that and a separate location. They actually have separate locations that you can track within the context of your own logbook. So that's pretty cool. You can do all kinds of custom stuff for that. Bands is another option that you have here under your username. This is where you can set whether or not you even have the band and whether you want to track certain things for that band. Again, I just left mine just to all, so I didn't customize that at all on mine. The next section is an ADIF import-export feature, and I use this to plop all of my QSOs and QSLs that I had in my QLog instance as an ADIF file, and basically checked a few boxes here. It has the ability to import duplicate QSOs, so in case you wanted duplicates to come right on in, you can check that. And then you can also pre-mark all the QSOs as uploaded to the various services like Logbook of the World, EQSL Logbook, HRD Log, QRZ, Club Log, and so on. And it also has the ability, if you want it, to look up the DXCC information directly, or whether you wanted to use the information that's in the ADIF file. So just in case you had a minimal ADIF file that didn't have location or DXCC entity information, you can have it go ahead and update that as it's bringing in the logbook. And then you can also have it override the login login call sign. So like your calling call sign, the operator call sign and stuff like that on the import. You can have it always use your call sign should you have some other weirdness to your log. And then blah, blah, blah. Don't really care about that. It has an export feature. You can do two from dates. That's pretty cool. Logbook of the world. Let's see, what is this for? Date range not selected, blah, 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 call sign. I've never used that, so I don't know. Have you used any of these ADIF import export features for Logbook of the World or DARC DCL?
Yes, I have to match my uploads with downloads to see which ones are actually QSLs versus QSOs. So, yes.
Oh, okay. So, did you know how, I mean, what specifically would you use this for? Is this just for...
Specifically the Logbook of the
World. Oh, it's to mark them. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yep, to mark them.
As exported. Okay, so I've already done this, so I didn't have to use that feature at all. Some of the other features that they have here for exports, they also have a KML export, which is basically a geolocator file that is used for like Google Earth and stuff like that. So if you're familiar with using that, you know what a KML file is. There's a DX Atlas Grid Square export, a SOTA export for doing your SOTA import, I guess, for over there on the SOTA site. A Cabrillo export if you're doing a contest, an EDI export. I have no idea what that is. Or a CFD export. So lots of exports and stuff like that. You also have the ability to do OQRS requests, QSLQ, labels. So these are some of the print jobs you can do. Third-party services. This is where you configure additional stuff, and you can actually set your certificate and stuff like that. So like this would be for Logbook of the World. You need to upload your certificate, and then you can actually run a sync for EQSL. It's, again, you set your location. And you can do the same thing. You can download QSOs, upload QSOs, has some various tools that you can do and test your connection to that third-party service. Same with HRD log and QRZ and the QO100, which, of course, we don't get over here. That's over there for our people on the other side of the earth. API keys is an area where you're going to set up API keys for connecting your rig control to this website. So imagine your web server is somewhere in the cloud, like mine is, and your radio is not in the cloud. It's in your garage, like mine is. You need a way to connect it. So an API key is basically how it authenticates with the application, so it can connect your radio and stuff. And we're going to talk about that here in a short bit. And then the hardware interfaces is going to show you what's connected. And that's funny. I just switched the name of mine, so it I'm going to delete that one. because I was like, I'm not using the IC7100. So anyway, set as default radio. Cool. So this is also where if you have multiple hardware interfaces. So let's say you have a few rigs, like Russ has got a couple rigs there connected to his system. He's got the 7100 and the 710? Did you got 710? Is that what it is?
710. Yeah,
710, yeah. Yeah, so a couple of rigs. So he probably has a couple of hardware interfaces showing if he has both of the rigs connected. So you'll be able to see all your connected rigs. And then you can also set a default radio within that context. So when you log into the site, it'll know which radio you're on. Or if you happen to be in a multi-radio situation, you can flip it to a different radio. That's going to be important when you actually click on some of the other tabs, like going into the logbook or going into live QSO mode. So when it goes into live QSO mode, it says, okay, I need to figure out what radio you're on, because, you know, otherwise it'll just default to something silly like, you know, 160 or something like that. So I'll take a break here, take a breath, and... should we talk about just the overall feature set before we get into options for connecting your rig?
Yeah, because connecting a rig is a little different than in other loggers. So, yeah, we should probably just talk about features.
Okay, so once you have all your stations set up and you've gone about as far as you can go, you've imported your log, now you have some tools and stuff like that. So across the top, of your main login interface. You have basically one, two, three, you know, several drop downs here. The first one is logbook, which is going to give you an overview of your logbook, which is basically the homepage of WaveLog for your stuff. So it actually will bring you to the logbook, but if you get rid of it, it's exactly the same screen. So you have an overview. You have an advanced logbook, which basically gives you a line by line log, so like a table of log with more detailed information like grid squares and modes and whether or not it was sent. It gives you nice little status indicators of whether it was sent to club log, QSL, EQSL, and all your other areas, along with the DXCC information and whatnot. You know, your typical log stuff. You can look at your view, your QSL cards, if you're taking any from in that way, or like electronic QSL cards, or your EQSL cards you can view as well directly inside of the logbook viewer. But let's get over to the next one, which is QSOs. QSO dropdown gives you several options here. The first one is the live QSO. So when you go and launch into the live QSO, it'll attempt to connect to your rig, should you have it connected. And I'm not seeing mine pop up, so maybe it's here. I shouldn't have messed with my setting. Anyway, it'll go ahead and switch to whatever rig and mode that your rig is in, and it'll show you. It'll highlight it all in green at least in this color scheme that I'm on. It'll highlight that, so you can actually manually input a call sign here. So it's a standard kind of log setup. And if I put in like a K5 TUX, just for an example, it gives you some suggestions for the call signs should you have, a partial call or whatever. Of course, we know this is a good call. It gives you options, which mode, band, frequency, that should all come from rig control. Should you have it, you can override the RSTs. If you click out of the call sign, it'll go ahead and look it up. And this one, of course, said it's John in Mount Vernon at Echo Mike 37. And says it's 987 miles from my house. And it gives you a nice little map of where he's located at. I'm not sure. Is that right? That doesn't look right. It looks off. Aren't you to the west of Springfield?
Yes.
Yeah, it shows your dot on the east of Springfield. So, because it's just the full grid square. So it must be the center of the grid square. And then it'll say how many times, like I've worked Russ here 8 times before, and it shows me which bands and stuff like that. So it shows me the last 5 contacts I've made with him. If I wanted to change anything on my station, I could do that, like which rig I'm using. If I'm just on the wrong band or something like that, I need to override something, I can do that. In the general tab, it gives you all the lookup stuff was already done, but if there happened to be a POTA reference, you could type it in there if you didn't surface the POTA reference to the front of the page. If you're a satellite, you can actually start typing a satellite name. It has an autocomplete on that. Which satellite mode will probably autocomplete based upon which satellite selection. You have a nice little note tab here. So this is all a tabbed interface. So you can pop in some notes about the QSO. And then you can also update any QSO information. And if they even have a little star there for making it your favorite band and mode. So lots of stuff there. And then you hit the save QSO and it saves it in your log. And that's pretty much a live QSO. A post QSO would be something you've done in the past and you're just trying to manually enter it. So same gives you the same screen, except for it's not going to pick your radio and stuff like that directly. Let's see if it will. Okay, well, technically I can pick the radio I used, but it's letting me manually set the band parameters and what frequency and stuff like that. So you can set all that for your post QSO. Same information is exposed. So if you're just jetting in a single QSO, this is definitely a way to do it through the QSO thing. If you're doing a fast QSO, this is another option of login. They have what's called a simple fast log entry. And the fast log entry, or simply an FLE, is a system to log QSOs very quickly and efficiently. Due to its syntax, only a minimum input is required. So this would be good for probably doing contests and stuff like that. And I see, yes, the simple fast log entry allows you to set a date, station call, and also allows you to select which contests. So have you ever used CloudLog to do a contest?
I have. I did the CQ Worldwide Single Sideband DX with it.
Okay, cool. How'd that work for you?
It works excellent. And if you look at my, if you go to my log, you don't have to do that right now. I'm just saying if you go to my log, you'll see that the logs that have or that came from that contest will show the exchange next to the RSTS and RSTR. So you can see which ones were from that contest.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I will say I did that contest as AF0SS. So you you would see it under that if you're looking at that particular logbook. But yeah, no, for contesting, it works absolutely great. And if you log in another application and you want to mark your CUSAs as being from a particular contest when you import them, that is an option as well.
Yeah. So it looks like here, like you. So did you use the simple fast log entry? I'm not sure if it's the same on Cloud Log, or did you use the live contest logging?
I don't. No, I logged it with live CUSA. I just did the live CUSA logging and just logged them as I did them. So.
Oh, so does CloudLog have this stuff down here, the live contest logging or the post-contest logging?
It may, but I don't remember. I don't think I did that. So,
okay.
So I may have done it the hard way.
Quite possible.
I didn't say I knew everything about CloudLog. I just said I used it. So, yeah, it may have been better because it does allow you in the contest logging to choose like the exchange type, the contest, and all that kind of stuff. And it may have been better for me to use this. I don't think I did. I think I just logged everything as I was, you know, in the normal live CUSO.
Yeah, interesting. So, yeah, definitely looks like something that I'm going to definitely test out and see if it's functional for me. Although, you know, I know I'm going to probably use not 1mm anyway, just because I'm a creature of habit. So, there's a simple fast log entry. There's a live contest logging, and then there's a post contest logging, and you can kind of get the gist of that now. So live is for right now and post is for afterwards.
Actually, you know what? I have to retract what I just said. Cause when I did the CQ Worldwide DX SSB contest, I was actually using N1MM and I had N1MM logged to CloudLog. It was using a integration with the API. That's how I logged it.
You were using N1MM or not 1MM?
Or not 1MM. I was using not 1MM and it logged into, well, it logged into itself, of course, because not 1MM is a logger, but it also sent the log data to, at the time, CloudLog. So that's how I got the data in.
Cool. So yeah, so contest logging is easy and direct here. I mean, you know, obviously your mileage may vary, you know, much like Russ's using not 1MM. The next section here is notes. So apparently you can create notes and have notes in here. So must be, yeah, maybe just general notes. Should you need to take a note that has a note application directly in the logbook.
I did notice that the export for the log or for notes is separate from the CUSO export. So it is literally a separate data store.
Oh, okay, cool. That's interesting. The next section is analytics, which this has lots of analytics. So they have the ability to see statistics, your number of CUSOs, work per band, per mode, per year, per month, unique call signs, lots of different stats, QSL stats, based upon bands. You have all kinds of breakouts. You actually have grid square maps. You can look at which grid squares you've worked based upon band, mode, propagation. You name it, that's there. Grid square activations, whether you were an activator and who was an activator and stuff like that. Distances worked. Ooh, this is interesting. Distances worked. This one's taking a bit to come up. Oh, there we go. Let's see. My furthest contact was with a very familiar call sign, VK6EK. 9,947 miles. 9,947.9 miles. So, yeah, quite a ways.
Okay, mine doesn't go out that far. I know I've had a contact with him, so why do I not see him in my... interesting. Oh, no, it's right there, VK60K.
So how many miles is yours?
17,000 kilometers. I didn't see what thousand miles.
Someone hasn't switched their thing to miles.
No, I did, though. That's the thing. Hang on a second. Wavelog preferences. I'm pretty sure I set mine to miles.
That's your user preferences.
Oh, no, it's set to kilometers. How about that? Miles. let me see. Let me save my account. And then let's go back to the analytics. And distances worked. And show. Chug, 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 chug. VK60K. Distance was 10,724 and a half miles.
Oh, you worked them. You worked one longer than me. That's terrible. Well, that's still pretty cool. Yeah. So yeah, the analytics are really neat. You get days with QSOs, so shows like your streaks. So if you want to gamify your own log, this is a way to do it. You got accumulated. Yeah, just all kinds of interesting stats and ways to show it and stuff like that. So let's get away from stats and let's go into the next section, which is called awards. Awards is where you can track all of your fun things like your CQ awards, your DXCC, your ITU, your SIG, your VUCC, worked all continents, worked all states, you name it. It's in there. SOTA, POTA, IOTA, Canada, Germany awards, Great Britain, Japan awards, Luxembourg, Switzerland. And then also in USA, you can track counties and let's see what else you got. Worked all states. Yeah. Gridmaster and Fred Fish Memorial Award, which of course is the 6 meter award. So yeah, lots of award tracking and all kinds of stuff in there. A couple of nice tools. The next section is tools. This is where you'll find a DX calendar. So a link to data from NG3K's website on current DX expeditions. So you can kind of see what's going on right now. The contest calendar comes from the contestcalendar.com, and it does show you a display inside your window, inside your logbook app with all that information in it, which is really cool. I do like that. The Hamsat, of course, if you're a part of that. The band map is kind of cool because this brings in the DX cluster. And you can actually have the DX cluster filter to your radio connection. So I just selected my radio, and it knows it's on 20 meters. And so it shortened the list of spots to only be on 20 meters. And yeah, that works just as any DX cluster should work. And then satellite timers, it actually will bring out satellites that are approaching you, which is kind of cool. I didn't even set anything else up for that. So it looks like it pulls data from df2et.de. So it brings the telemetry data over from that, and it compares it against your grid, and then it finds passes that are going to be coming up, and the duration, azimuth, and max elevation. So yeah, lots of cool information kind of at your fingertips and stuff like that. And then the next little section looks like just more setup stuff. It doesn't have a label on mine, but if you have additional user accounts, you can add additional user accounts here. So I'm guessing this is like the tools window. You have some global options. Should you want anything changed for global-wise to affect other users? This is also where you set up like email. Should you want Wavelog to do some emails, you can set up either a send mail server or you can actually have it use an SMTP host. So that works really good. So there's some DX cluster information there, OQRS, version info, whether or not you want to show it on your website or on your logbook. Supported modes. You can add more modes should there not be a mode that is in the list. Themes, satellites, there's a backup button. This is great to back up your ADEF data. I suggest having that do it on some kind of cycle so you can bring it up. You can update your country files. You have a cron manager, so this is be where you're actually setting things up to run cron jobs and whether or not it is actually running. And then what else here? And then debug information. You don't need to know that. So anyway,
actually, you should click that. It's actually useful information.
Oh, okay. Oh, look at that. So it gives you the version of Wavelog, the version of your server, your PHP version, MySQL version, CodeIgniter version. Yeah, it just says running 3.2.0.dev-dev. If stuff has ever been downloaded, And oh yeah, I can see that my POTA files has never been downloaded. I should update that, huh? What does that mean? Ooh, look at that. I have no idea what that just did.
it downloaded the park information, like the list of parks and all of that. And if you set up the cron manager, mm-hmm. it sort of walks you through how to set up the cron manager in the wiki. And if you do that and then look at your cron manager, it'll say that your status master cron is okay instead of giving you a red box. And then it will do all of those downloads automatically via cron. So you don't have to ever worry about it again.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Plus, it will also auto upload your QSOs to your various third party sites.
Interesting. I have to set that up.
Yes. It's very cool.
So, yeah. So the end of it all is that, yeah, one of the setting items, which I didn't mention, actually provides a link to your viewer for your log. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we provided those short links for you in the show notes so you can see our logbooks as a visitor. The nice part about the visitor logbook is, I mean, you don't have to have a user account, and they can kind of see some fun stuff here. So let's talk a little bit quickly about what's available here. I think it's just the active log, right? Yeah, you can't see stats.
Right, you can just see the actual log data. And I can't remember if the fields that it displays in the visitor viewer are customizable or not, but you certainly get enough data to see what's been logged recently. You get a map and you can see like where the QSOs have been and stuff like that. So you want to see where I've been working lately. Although I apparently don't have a QSO since July 18th, I guess I need to get to it. But yeah.
That's okay. I didn't have any from May until the other day when I installed this. But I did notice, yeah, so this is you can take a look at that viewer site and see if there's anything you want to change with how it displays. I just noticed that mine still shows the European section or European dates. So I'm definitely going to fix mine in the global options to ensure that the dates are in the right format for the viewing, at least. For the most people, I would be interested in snooping on my log.
I thought I changed mine because I like to have it as the YYYYMMDD, and it's not showing it that way. It's showing European style. So is it like not taking the things that I set? Because I could have sworn I set that.
I never know, right? I don't know. Maybe you can't change that. I was just going through here looking at the setup, and I don't even see where that is available to set that up. I would assume it would be in the global options, but I don't see the date as one of the things you can change. So, yeah, there goes.
I definitely found it where you could change the date format. I am really trying to find where I found that right now. So,
I mean, in the account, you can, because that's a setup.
Oh, there it is. Here. It's under Wavelog preferences under your account.
Right, but if you are not logged in, so you're in the viewer session, you don't take the preferences of the logged in user. So I was looking for a global setting, which I don't see it anywhere. But yeah, that could be something that, hey, this is an open source project. So you can make a PR and fix that. Expose that in the global options in appearance, because that's where it should show up. So yeah, nice PR. a nice pull request onto the repo would take care of that and have that available for everybody.
I changed it. I will say that I just changed it in my account, and the visitor viewer changed as well.
Well, open it up in a incognito tab.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Anyway, I mean, that's it. I'm gonna go and try to daily drive this for at least for a month or so. I know I want to do some work on this particular machine that I'm on right now, so it kind of gives me that flexibility to not be too concerned about the logbook itself and being able to plug the log in from anywhere or connect to any device in the process of moving stuff around. But this is a Wavelog. It's you know, very similar to CloudLog, obviously just a fork and some different appearance options and functionalities and whatnot. And, you know, maybe even a different vision and mission for the project and stuff like that. So if you're interested in having your logbook out there on the interwebs, or even maybe hosted locally on your Raspberry Pi or mini PC or maybe your Proxmox server or whatever you have, WaveLog is definitely an option, and I think it's pretty interesting. I'm definitely kind of digging it. So let's switch over to how do I get my radio connected to it. Now I know Russ is using the CloudLog connector, which is still available because this is a fork and it is one of the options. You can do a CloudLog connector that uses Rig Control D. I use the thing called WaveLog Gate, which is basically Electron app. It is sort of Electron app. It's a Node app, for sure. A Node app, because I'm just running it from the command line. So I'm running npm run build, or let's see, let me look at my npm run start. So I'm literally running it from the command line. And it's an interface that uses FLRig, which is a rig control interface that we talked about before. I used to use quite often part of the FL series, like FL Digi and FL Arc and FL Message and stuff like that. FL Rig to actually connect to the rig. And it uses that. And it also has the ability to suck in UDP packets as they come across from JTDX or WSJTX and then transfer them directly to your log via the API key. So that's going back to the API key, generating a rewrite API key, plugging this in. It has a config here for setting up the WaveLog URL, which would be wherever your WaveLog instance is set up, your API key, and your station ID. So that's you'd find that over there on your stations, and what you want to call it, and where it can find FLRig, and whether it's FLRig enabled. And then you're off to the races. I was able to quickly log a couple of QSOs. My very first QSO didn't log because I didn't quite have it configured right, because I had it set up as rig zero, which doesn't exist. So WaveLog Gate is the one they're maintaining. This is DJ7NT is maintaining it. It comes again with complete source code, everything else. And then, Russ, you're using the CloudLog one. Have you actually got it connecting with WaveLog, or you're still just connecting to CloudLog?
Still just connecting to CloudLog, but it shouldn't be any difference because it's just a PHP script that creates a loop, and it periodically pulls Rig Control D and then uses the API to push the data up to CloudLog / WaveLog. So I haven't switched it over. I've actually rewritten CloudLog Rig Control interface a little bit because it does some things that are not exactly, it doesn't understand if you're on the BVFO, for example. So I've actually made some changes to it. I might actually just rewrite the whole thing and push it up as a WaveLog add-on. Because while it does work, it needed some fixing. But
yeah, interesting. Well, I can tell you the one that you hate actually works fine in the BVFO.
Well, because FLRig properly handles the BVFO, I'm sure. It has to do with the fact that the PHP script in CloudLog Rig Control interface is literally just pulling Rig Control D. But one thing it doesn't do is pull for the VFO. So it always assumes it's on the AVFO. So that's what I had to fix. And I need to make some more changes to make it a little more stable, but that will be out there somewhere. I'll probably put it on GitHub.
Yeah, that would be useful. You should do a pull request if that's actually out there on GitHub somewhere.
I'll probably just fork it and redo it because it needs a lot of work.
Interesting. Cool. Well, that's that's everything that I've done within a nutshell of this particular deep dive. To test out WaveLog and kind of see, is it a viable solution? And I mean, my initial opinion is, yeah, I mean, I could totally use this and it doesn't break any of my workflow stuff. So I'm going to use it, like I say, for the next, probably at least the next month or so, especially when I transition this computer and see what I want to do with it. But yeah, you should probably give Wavelog a look, or even give CloudLog a look. I mean, if you're interested in doing a web-based logging and want to kind of bring the logging away from your shack to a place where you can isolate it from the individual computer. I know we always talk about the having the computer log in with Qlog, and you know, just most recently with Jlog, we kind of mentioned that one as well. But the many loggers that log directly to your computer, this is definitely an option that you know, gets you away from the computer being the single point of failure for your log.
Yeah, like I think I saw somewhere that there was like going to be an Android/iOS client that would allow offline integration with CloudLog and WaveLog, so that it would do like you could do like remote logging for like POTR or something like that, and then do a link and push at some point. But on Reddit, there were people complaining that it wasn't ready for prime time yet, and they are having issues with it. But that might be something that comes forward in the future.
Well, I mean, I see that they have the install app on the WaveLog thing, so I'm assuming at least it's a WebAssembly based.
Yeah, I don't have enough information to expound on that. So.
Yeah. So I haven't tried it on my phone to see if it actually would install an app. So while you're doing any closing thoughts on this topic before we move over to social media roundup, why don't you have some closing thoughts?
Okay, I do have a couple of closing thoughts. They're really nothing that's going to add a lot to this conversation, other than I do like, there's always been some, I don't know, politicalness, I guess, with the CloudLog. And you know, we had some early on initial, you know, attitudes, I guess, from the main author. I don't know that that's, I mean, it didn't stop me from using it. It was still my favorite logger. And WaveLog, I think that I haven't checked CloudLog since installing WaveLog, so I don't know if any of the changes that are going into WaveLog are being developed in CloudLog as well. I'm sure my version is several revisions old, but from what I've seen of the changes that have been made to WaveLog, like differences in where they've put the drop-down menus and some of the options that have been added, the dark mode options, the different themes, the additional features, the contest, the expanded analytics, the look and feel of it, things like moving POTA to the front page of your QSL logger, and otherwise keeping the functionality of the API are definitely things that are probably going to keep me using WaveLog going forward. It just seems like the four main developers and the other people who are on the team are really motivated to make this thing the best that it can be. And I definitely want to go with a team that's working in that direction. And since it was easy to set up and migrate, oh, we didn't mention that there is a migration tool. If you happen to be running CloudLog, there's a migration.php file, which will ease the transition going from CloudLog to WaveLog, which I did not use. I did a build and move as opposed to a migration. So you can do it either way. But we wanted to mention that is out there, and how to do it, how to use the migration tool is in the wiki. But yeah, I like WaveLog's direction. I like their motivation, and I will definitely be using it from here on out.
Yeah, awesome. So yeah, I'm going to use it, like I say, for at least the next month. So should you have any feedback or questions, please send them our way through our normal feedback mechanisms. And there you go. There's the deep dive on a WaveLog. I'm sure we spent a lot of extra time on it than we anticipated. I'm more out now, so we should probably move on to the easy stuff.
All right. Well, I'll wrap up with the easy stuff. And those ways that you can contact us include the social media networks. Feel free to send us a DM or contact us on Mastodon or use email or whatever is your favorite way to get in contact with us. All that information is on the website, by the way, lhspodcast.info. That is mentioned in the outro on every episode, but I'm willing to bet that not many people actually get that far. So with that, we'll mention our new subscribers, supporters, and live participants. We did have a new subscriber, Professor Chi-Chi. No new free Patreons, no new Facebooks, no new Twitters, no new YouTubes. Several people joined us on Discord, which makes me wonder if we got mentioned somewhere because a bunch of people popped on. So if you're one of these people and you heard about us somewhere, please let us know in Discord, since you're on Discord. We have 0CMMA0-18, Chip, 9K2DB, G1 CPU, F5 Ro, KF6IF, KQ4JZU, and N1JUR Eric. And by the way, Eric, N1JUR, is part of the Live Free and Ham group over on YouTube, and they also have a podcast release as well. So if you want more ham radio content, check out Live Free and Ham. And of course, they're from New Hampshire, so, you know, they're awesome. On Instagram, we had N1JUR join us there as well. On Mastodon, Sojourner. No merch sales, nobody joined us on the mailing list. And tonight in the live chat, we had Joel, KC0YEW, and Don, KB2YSI. So with that, we are down to the bottom of the show. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, whether live or catching the podcast after it's released. We really appreciate it. And extra special thanks, as always, to our financial supporters. We really appreciate you guys. Help keep the lights on. Help us keep us moving forward so we can do 555 more episodes, I guess. In the meantime, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time when we get to our short topics episode, and we'll catch you all then. This has been episode number 555 of Linux in the Ham Shack. For the On Assignment Cheryl, W5MOO, I'm Russ, K5TUX.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1909-547-7469. That's 1909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.